Hi, I'm Marcus, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon. You can too by visiting patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listener, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And you know George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know, if you grew up in front of the TV in the 70s and 80s, more than once you were invited to buy a clapper or a chia pet or a set of Ginsu steak knives. If I told you we were going to do an episode all about the as-seen-on-TV phenomenon, how much would you pay? Don't answer yet, because if you order right now, you'll also get some fourth listener email.
Wow.
We have here at the top of the show.
That's a nice segue.
Yeah, that is
props
good.
On that.
Very good. Very good. Well done, sir. Well done.
Our first fourth listener email is from Sean, who actually hit us up on Facebook, and he wrote in to say, when I found your podcast at the beginning of April, I had to go the purest route. I finally made it to August 2nd, 2018.
Wow.
he's working his way through the backlog. He said, you guys are awesome and make my morning walk so much more fun. Not sure I can pick a favorite episode. They've all been insightful and informative. Keep up the good work, guys.
Wow.
Nice.
Thank you, Sean.
I wonder if he's listening to the right show, if we're informative.
Yeah. Is this our podcast that he's listening to?
It's like some other Gen X grown-up podcast.
Maybe it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
our inbox got clogged with someone else's mail. Thank you so much, Sean.
That's so, wow. That's
we appreciate
great. Thank
you writing in. We got a second email as well. This is from our patron, Mike C. The subject line was collectible drinking glasses.
Again? Man,
we've
everybody
got so many emails
episode.
On that episode. You know,
I thought the Dewey Decimal System would be our hallmark backtrack, but apparently I was wrong.
So Mike C says, I enjoyed listening to the collectible drinking glass episode. It brought back a lot of memories. I collected a couple of collectible glasses. The first was the Flintstones mugs from McDonald's.
Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
They were from the 90s. I also have a pair of Arby's wine glasses.
Oh my God.
Really?
What?
Whoa.
Okay. I wonder what pairs best with an Arby's roast beef sandwich, like a nice Cabernet.
Yeah. Or a nice iced Pinot, like a 34.
MD 2020.
Oh yeah.
MD 2020.
I know what that is because I've sold it.
Little Pepto-Bismol, perhaps. Yes. He goes on to say, the cups I enjoyed the most, though, were the funny face plastic cups from Pillsbury. You had to send in for them, and my grandmother did. Oh. We had all the cups and a pitcher.
A pitcher?
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Remember, that was like a Kool-Aid competitor, the funny face stuff?
Yep.
He said the flavors had great names, although some of them were also a little racist.
Oh, jeez.
Well, those are the best names.
Right. Here's a list of the names. Jolly Ollie Orange, originally Engine Orange, so they changed that one.
Ouch.
I didn't name it. I'm just reading. Goofy Grape, I remember. Freckle Face Strawberry.
Okay.
Loudmouth Lime.
That's me.
That's you. Rootin' Tootin' Raspberry, probably my favorite name of the group.
Yeah.
And Choo Choo Cherry, originally Chinese Cherry.
Ooh. Oh, Jesus.
Ugh.
That doesn't even make any sense.
I'm not even sure why that would be bad, but
it just feels creepy.
It just is, right?
It does.
It's like Hanoi Hannah or something. It just, there's
just
something
just
wrong with that.
But they changed it. But yeah, he says, hope you have a great day. FFL, further fourth listener. Love that.
Nice.
Mike. Yeah. I remember those, the funny face. They were plastic and they were molded in the, like, it looks like the character.
Yeah.
I remember those. Those were cool. I had forgotten about them. We should have covered them.
Yeah. I think I vaguely remember them, but.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I remember old TV ads of them. They were very, very politically incorrect by today's standards, I know.
No, it's funny. It's like, I'm still surprised at how much that drinking glass episode has sparked memories and stuff in people. Like, a lot more than I thought it would, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's definitely one of the seminal collectible things that we could do as kids because parents were okay with getting glasses that we liked.
It wasn't a toy.
It wasn't, right, exactly.
So it was like, okay.
Right, it's functional.
You'll use it. We'll put juice in it. Yeah.
It's functional. That's just great. Who knew?
Apparently, we're doing our job. We found the topic that resonated. That's
again,
good.
It's no Dewey Decimal System.
But what is?
It only took us 3 years.
If you're a relatively new listener to the show and you didn't hear our backtrack of the Dewey Decimal System, you owe it to yourself. just the fact that we made it through the show is unbelievable. Thank you, Sean and Mike, for writing in. If you would like your email read here on the show, you can hit us up on Facebook like Sean did, or write us at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single message, and most of them make the show. As popular as the collectible drinking glass episode was, you could not get your collectible drinking glasses from an As Seen on TV ad back in the 70s and 80s, so it is time to jump into that As Seen on TV fun right after this.
There's a new pet.
Chia.
Chia Pet, the pottery that grows. It's fun and easy. Soak your chia, spread the seeds, keep it watered, and watch it grow. Chia Pets and Trees, the pottery that grows.
The Chia Pet and Chia Tree are available at Kmart, Rite Aid, Ames, and Woolworth. Makes a great gift.
Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack, and it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We were all latchkey kids, different areas of the country we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
We spent most of our afternoons and weekends sitting in front of the TV.
Sure.
There were no DVRs. We couldn't fast forward and skip commercials. So we had to sit and listen and enjoy and endure.
Or rented a bathroom.
Cereal ads and toy ads.
Yeah.
And a bunch of, if you act now, you can order this. We'll ship it to you in 4 to 6 weeks As Seen on TV ads.
But wait.
They were so much torture because every one of them was something I wanted to buy and none of them were anything my parents
I wonder where
you're
going with that, because, yeah, I wasn't tortured. I loved them,
yeah.
But, yeah, you couldn't afford to buy them. Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah,
they were entertaining as hell. Whoever did those did a really good job of marketing, because, like Georgia said, I'm 8 and I need Ginsu knives. You know, I mean, it's...
And the marketing of it, they picked something that either solved a problem you didn't know you had,
yeah,
right,
or it was an interesting way to do something that you thought you needed. Like, I didn't know that I needed a bedazzled denim jacket, but when I saw them put all those bedazzled gems on a jacket, I really needed a bedazzled denim jacket.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the As Seen on TV kind of moniker is a generic name that represents all of these products that were advertised on TV in the United States or for direct response mail order, but mostly on TV. And it would be like a long form ad, usually like a full minute, if not a long infomercial.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be a minute or two even. And they're showing you everything about this. And the thing that made them so memorable is that they played over and over and over and over to the point where, you know, we talked about the I've fallen and I can't get up came from one of these old As Seen on TV ads. It became part of the pop culture because it happened so much.
Well, and, you know, As Seen on TV kind of came along later in my mind. Like, at first it was just whatever the product was. There was no the red little circle bubble square thing with the As Seen on TV.
It didn't know it was
logo.
A category of things until later.
Yeah.
Right. It kind of became lumped together when people said there's a lot of these kind of things that became As Seen on TV. Right. Yep. And I think that As Seen on TV came out of maybe later they started categorizing them when these things started showing up other places and they would reference the ad. Like, as you saw on TV, that right. thing, mm-hmm. the commercial you saw, that later being. So at the time, we didn't know they were called As Seen on TV because that's where we saw everything. But later, that emblem became very much representative. So it looks like a TV Guide logo almost.
Yes.
Well, and I think that's exactly what it was supposed to do, right?
That's what they're trying to, kind of invoke. And it says As Seen on TV.
How sad is it that any of our younger listeners right now have no idea what a TV Guide is?
What's a TV Guide?
TV Guide? Is that a channel on the...
You're in luck. We did a backtrack all about it. Just go back in the archives.
Why do you call it a TV? Why not just a streaming guide? I don't get it.
No.
And the thing also about these things that you couldn't find them in stores usually, right? Most of these items you could never find out stores.
No, right. They were never sold in stores. That was a big thing
back then. You couldn't, right?
That was a big thing, yeah.
And they would say that, not sold in stores. Exactly, that would be part of the announcement.
And if you act now.
we're actually going to look over several categories of them. And I hope we touch on some of your favorites. But right, so you had all these different marketers. They were like Time Life and Space Bag and K-Tel and Ronco and Thane and all these different. And then later it kind of evolved into like a brand or a brick and mortar sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Even today, by the way, the As Seen on TV is not, it's public domain. Anyone can use it. No one owns it.
Oh, so I know everybody can use it for real because in Panama City here in Florida, mm-hmm. there is an As Seen on TV store. That's all they sell As Seen on TV stuff. And mm-hmm. it's older stuff. You know, it's not new stuff, but that's everything on their shelves. It's all As Seen on TV stuff that they've gotten through whatever resource.
Whether it was ever on TV or not.
You're right. But it all has that logo on it.
Yeah. Yep. You know, one really well-represented category in a lot of these As Seen on TV ads were records and books and stuff like that. Marketers K-Tel. I don't know how many K-Tel records. That was something my parents would let me order.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, they would?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, because it had songs on it that they liked.
Goofy Greats and Dumb Ditties and stuff like that.
Were they the ones that did songs by the original artists?
K-Tel didn't do that, but that was a hook,
that
right?
That was a thing. Where the original artist was a music group.
Called
the original artist of these songs.
Yeah. So starting as early as the 60s, K-Tel out of Canada, they were releasing compilation albums, music for some of the biggest artists of the day. And this was before iTunes or Spotify or any kind of streaming. And it was one of the only ways you could get these collections of songs without buying all the individual albums because of the record store.
It was like pre-made mixtapes.
They were mixtapes. Exactly, they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And K-Tel albums, that's just one subsidiary of a larger company that we'll talk about throughout this whole episode. K-Tel was one of the giant As Seen on TV marketers.
Yeah, they put out a lot of different stuff, not just these records, for sure. Yeah, one of my favorites, I don't even know if it was K-Tel or not, but you guys remember Freedom Rock, right? That commercial?
Oh, yeah.
It was like Freedom Rock. 60s and early 70s.
Hey, is that Freedom Rock, man? Yeah, man. Yeah. We'll turn it up, man.
Turn it up, man.
Oh, my God.
They're all stoners, apparently.
Oh, Freedom Rock was, and it was good music. I mean, it wasn't the scammy original artist. It was really original artists doing the song. How they got the licensing to do that, and it's a pre-internet day where it's like a wild west, anything goes. I guess you're playing royalties, you could do it. I don't know.
Speaking of music, on the flip side of the Freedom Rock, you had like the Time Life collections, which are all the classical music.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like a Masterpiece Theater soundtrack for you.
Of Brahms. Now you can hear with the New York Symphony. And it seemed like such a weird thing to pander on afternoon TV, for kids, hearing kids shows and stuff. I'm like, classical music? Like, bring back the Freedom Rock. What the hell is this?
In hindsight, right? We talked about during our subscription, Looking Record Clubs.
Yeah, Record Clubs, that was it.
But Time Life Books was another huge one that was advertised in these As Seen on TV things.
Yeah.
Because initially, it was the only place you could get them was through these ads.
Well, and it started out in 1961, believe it or not, as one of their separate divisions. Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And they just did all kinds of crazy stuff. They did the American Indians, the American Wilderness, if you remember those kinds of things that they did.
Mm-hmm. World War I, World War II.
And then
stuff.
Later on, they got into like fix-it-yourself type books and stuff. And then they got into the really weird stuff, right? And that was the UFOs and aliens.
Yeah,
and
supernatural unexplained mysteries.
I wanted every damn one of those books and don't have a single one to this day. I really wanted those.
I have the entire set of the unsolved
you do?
Unexplained mysteries or what it was called.
That was a huge set. Too. too, oh, wasn't it?
You ain't lying. It was abuse. And what were the key things that was when we learned, you know, everything was, so apparently it costs more for cassette than it does for a record, mm-hmm. like $14.95 for cassette, $16.95 for compact disc or album, right?
Right. Yeah. Thing.
And send a self-addressed stamped envelope and a money order, blah, 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 and allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. Mm, all of those were like boilerplate you always heard. And 4 to 6 weeks was the norm.
Yeah.
That was the norm, yeah.
And you kind of forgot about it in the meantime, too. I mean, that's a long time.
Kind of like we were talking about in the last backtrack, we were talking about 9 to 5 and they had to wait 4 to 6 weeks for the reports to come through for New York.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So back then, 4 to 6 weeks was, it'll take that long to get it here. Of course, that makes sense. You know, it's gotta travel all the way across the country. I can't have it in a day. That's crazy.
One that has definitely come out of the As Seen on TV and made mainstream that you can walk up and find at your local Walgreens or CVS or your grocery store with the Chia Pets.
Chia.
That was such an odd thing.
Just a clay statue with bean sprouts all over it. That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's it. I know.
But now you grow other herbs too, you know?
Right.
Right. A Chia herb garden.
Yeah.
Now you get a Chia Bob Ross, a Chia Deadpool, a Chia. Everybody has. Have you seen the Bob Ross? Like his hair grows out?
Yeah. So what was the first pet, though?
It was like a sheep or something. Was it the first one?
Was it a sheep? I think so. I
think so, yeah.
So they started off with animals, and there were sheep and probably lions.
Whatever.
Or who knows?
Yeah, because they had the
but
mane.
But then they started getting into people's faces, like the little clown, weird gnome, troll face that they had.
Yeah, those are creepy.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. But I still wanted them all the time. Never got a single one. Not one time.
I feel like I bought one and never opened it.
I want to go buy one right now and start growing
no,
it
don't.
Here
you
on the podcast.
I think you do. You don't really want one.
I do, because... The way I understand, I've seen videos on it now. I guess you take that chia seed stuff and it's like in this weird slurry mixture and
it's
you
like
spread
a paste.
It.
You make a paste.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That just sounds and
it was
looks
kind of grooved.
Right.
So it had like these grooves where you can go. And because the clay would seep water, you would pour water into the clay. The capillary action would push the water out to the seeds and it would stay damp. You just kept water in the lamb.
And
it's
a miracle these seeds would grow.
But they never showed you all that extra work in the commercial. It was just the chia pet there and then like two or three photos in a row of the little seeds growing out as
like,
they expanded.
Like
out.
A stop motion saying.
Exactly.
You'll have to trim it. It's easy. No problem. Yeah. What ends up being
it felt
is
like
a mess.
Sea monkeys to me at that point. I don't know why. Yeah. It just felt like sea monkeys.
I almost like, I'm curious to see who has the patent on Chia Pets. Like, who came up with this thing?
It's got
to
be the pet rock guy. It's got to be the same guy.
Actually, I know who invented it.
Really?
There's this guy named Joseph Padot. In the early 70s.
Okay.
Padot. He's the same guy that invented the clapper that we'll talk about later, actually.
No, really?
Same
dude.
He
had two of these things? That's awesome.
He's a genius.
And if you're wondering, the chia seeds are actually Salvia hispanica, a member of the mint family. That's what you're growing on your chia pet.
Mint. Oh, okay. I thought they were like bean sprouts the way they looked. Okay.
See? Look how educational information. We're like a Time Life classical music set. We are so upscale.
Chia pet? Coincidence? Read the book.
Read the book.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping. Clap on the music. It's easy. Just plug the Clapper into any household outlet, then plug in your Lamb TV or stereo.
Clap on, clap off.
And the Clapper resets to help protect your home. Leave your appliances plugged into the Clapper, and your lights will go on, turning away unwanted guests.
Clap on, clap off. The Clapper.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On Pressbox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on Pressbox Access.
We were just talking about Joseph Padot and his other great invention. Clap on. Clap off.
Clap on, clap off.
The Clapper. Yep. So the Clapper was another great As Seen on TV item. I never had a Clapper, but I knew a kid that had one in his house. And it worked.
I knew a kid that had one.
I did. Well, I guess his parents had it, but I didn't go visit his parents, but it is his kid, you weirdo.
Now it's called Alexa.
And everybody's device is just clapped.
Everybody
off.
Says, what is it you wanted?
I want a Chia Pet.
All it was a box you plug into an outlet that had a microphone on it, and then you plug your appliance into it and it listened for the sharp sounds of clapping. Mm-hmm. You can actually do anything. You could go whoop, whoop, or whatever, as long as it's loud and sharp enough.
Oh, really?
We can do a commercial, whoop on, whoop off. You're going to do that stuff.
Yeah. It always reminded me of that little remote control van that I had, that the remote control was just this little metal snapping thing that made that noise, and then the van would turn to the right or turn to the left.
And it would just heard it. Yeah. Rather than any kind of radio frequency, it was just listening for the noises. Yep.
I just kept telling my parents all the time, I bet this guy just took that little device out of that van and stuck it in a plug. I could have done that.
John, you were like earlier saying, like, solve the problem you didn't know you had.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I'm in bed. I got to turn off the light. Oh, my God.
How inconvenient.
Yeah, how inconvenient. I used to have to lean over and flip the switch off with my hand.
Yep.
I love the old woman in the commercial who would do it like she turned over and slapped her hands out of frustration to clap it off as she was going to sleep.
She, right.
She's like, damn it.
I always thought she looked like she didn't want to be in the commercial.
Yeah.
Right. She probably didn't.
In my nightgown in this TV ad, dumb, right?
Best modern reference of the clapper is in a movie called The Acceptance.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
the
yeah.
one with, what's that guy, Justin Long, and he mm-hmm, develops mm-hmm. his own college. He's like, I always wanted a clap-on disco ball in my room, and he claps on, and this disco ball starts spinning in the lights and everything.
So he has it?
Yeah. I'm like, that's awesome, a clap-on disco ball. Yeah.
Well, speaking of problems that we didn't know we had, do you remember the Floby?
Oh, God.
Somebody said, well, we need to combine a vacuum cleaner and some quick moving razors together. What can we make?
What could go wrong?
You know, now in today of COVID-19 and everything, the Floby might have a resurgence as people can get haircuts, right?
I've heard people talking about the Floby. The basic concept of the Floby was it was just a razor that had a vacuum attachment. So you hooked your vacuum up to it,
right,
and you could adjust how long the tube was, and it was sucking your hair toward the razor.
Yeah, the little plastic things, they were different sizes, kind of like the ones on
like a guard.
Yeah, they were like the guards on an electric razor. Exactly. Yep.
On clippers, yeah.
Yep. The problem is there's no... there's no fade possible with a Floby.
Right.
Every hair is exactly, it's like this, you look like a chia pet, basically. Everything the exact same length. Right. The top of my head and my sideburns should not both be an inch long. Like, that's not how your hair's supposed to be.
Well, I tell you, with all the sheltering in place, this is a product that had its day. It could have come back.
It could have come back. Yeah. I know.
It
right?
Absolutely.
I just always liked the motion that they showed in the commercial. It was like you had to keep shaking it back and forth to get the hair to suck up into it or something. It was, I never understood why that was, and it only worked for people who had long hair. I've never kept long hair hardly in my life, so if you don't have long hair, that thing's not working. If you kept your hair short, not going to help you.
Yep. I think it's, and I'm not kidding, it was actually invented by a carpenter, and I'm going to say this very slowly. His name is Rick Hunts.
Oh my God.
That's don't say his name his fast. Name. That's his name.
That's not his name.
He did. That's right.
That's his name.
Now, listen, there was a columnist for Salon.com who actually cut his hair with a Floby in 2000. Then he went to local barbers and hairstylists, and they admitted it was a pretty good cut.
Wow.
Not garbage. Not great. Not garbage, though.
It's kind of like the bowl cut from the 50s, right? You just stick a bowl on somebody's head, cut it's around, head. Done. It's convenience. That's what it's for. And that's what most As Seen on TV products were all about.
Yeah, right.
Convenience of a thing, like you said, Mo, that you didn't know you had a problem
with. Well, in tandem with the Floby, there was also the Hair Magician. And if you remember this
the
one.
The Hair Magician?
Yes.
Which one was that?
This was basically a big comb that had a razor blade in it.
What the fuck?
And you adjusted where the razor blade was on the comb and then just combed your hair and it cut your hair to that length. Allegedly.
That just sounds dangerous and painful at the same time.
So much that could go wrong. So much that could go bad with that.
How much would you pay? Don't answer yet.
None.
There's more.
$0. How much would you pay me when I go to the hospital after using that device? That's what I want to know.
What? Don't comb your ear.
Do you remember the buttoneer?
I remember the name.
Like if your buttons fell off your shirt or something, they would...
Instead of stitching buttons on, instead use like a little clasp on the back.
It's like a rivet.
Yeah, it's like a rivet almost.
Like you're riveting a button in place.
Oh.
Yeah, essentially, it's what it is.
Yep.
And the thing about these commercials, they always show like the most inept people in the world trying to like do it the old-fashioned way.
Right. Right. You know? Right. Are you tired of sewing on buttons and they would poke their finger and go, ah, in black and white?
Yeah, like, exactly. Or your buttons fall, you know, and these buttons were guaranteed to stay on for life. I mean, these buttons were not coming off.
Just like a shower of buttons hitting a tabletop. I can see that.
Is sewing a button such a major pain in the ass that you just can't do it? Would you rather staple your buttons on with a rivet? Sure, you need the buttoneer.
Great for students. That's a lot of these things too. We're great for students.
Great for students. Basically,
great for students.
Great for the inept.
Oh my God.
Oh, we were talking about Life Call earlier. That's I've fallen
oh my God.
And I can't
get
up.
Get up.
Mm. Yep.
That took like literally 5 seconds to become a joke.
I know.
I mean, the first time you saw that, it was a joke the next day.
And it's a minute long commercial with lots of quotes in it. It's just something about, you see the little tumble, like this, clearly a stunt person doing the tumble.
Right.
And then you cut to an old lady laying at the bottom of the steps next to her walker.
Right.
Yeah. How'd the walker get down there?
And just the timbre of her voice, I'm falling and I can't get up. And it's like,
we're on our way, Mrs. Smith. Mercy, we're on our way. Yeah.
And the sad thing was, the commercial being so bad made it, you know, so recognizable to everyone, but it was a really good product. It was something that really helped people when they needed it.
And more importantly, the woman in that commercial was named Edith Four. She was a 70-something widow who actually had been saved by a life call after a tumble down her stairs in 1982.
Wow.
Seriously? Yep. Legit.
Wow.
So she was a real customer. I'd never known that.
Jeez.
I hope they paid her well for her work in that commercial then, if she, you know, was like a former customer who got saved by
They saved her life already. You got to pay her too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, actually they did.
No?
Apparently she got a flat rate of like $500 to do that.
What? For that commercial that's here for 40 years?
What, to lay on the floor and say I've fallen? That's not high, like big acting. That's easy to do.
No, but that commercial made that company $1 billion. She should have at least got like 0.5% or something. Something.
Something.
Of every single
one. Paid it to her family, whatever. Because if she doesn't make that line in that commercial, if she doesn't say it the way she does it, that product doesn't do as well. Man.
She definitely sold it.
Yeah, it's the part I remember. Yeah.
Fucking corporations stealing money from old people that they're kicking downstairs. This is awful.
Here's one for you, Mo. Remember great looking hair?
Oh, God. Okay.
Mo doesn't remember great looking hair.
No, I don't remember great looking hair.
I don't mean do you remember your great looking hair. I mean, do you remember the product called GLH, great looking hair?
That's the spray on hair, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
Oh, the spray on hair. God, that stuff's still being sold, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was mascara in a can, but the mascara was mixed in with these tiny, like, cotton candy-like fibers.
It was so gross.
And you sprayed it, and it would stick to your head, and they would show you even combing it, which I'm like, certain that can't work.
No. I remember that the commercials made it look like it worked amazing.
Right. Oh, yeah, it looked great.
You know, with the lighting and the angles, but I've seen this up close, not personal experience, just so you know. I've seen this.
I'm dubious of your claims, but all right.
But I saw somebody when I was growing up in New York who had it, and like, you just can't not stare at it, because it just looks like,
most sounds like the kid in school who's like, yeah, I had a girlfriend, we made out last weekend, you don't know where she's from Canada.
That's right. She's from Canada. I met her during camp. She died.
Camp.
You'll never meet her. She died.
No, it just looks like, oh my God, like what happened?
It seems like it would be convincing from a distance, but I mean, it's basically, it's mascara, adhesive, and fibers. And so if you were to touch it.
Oh my God. Run your fingers through somebody's. Ugh.
A winning combination if ever I've heard one.
That's exactly what I want in my head.
I wonder how much of that they sold, because you know they
sold. Oh, you know they sold a crap ton.
I don't know, how much did you buy, Mo? Do you have any idea?
Wow.
Okay, guys, first off, when this product came out, I had hair.
Okay. Fair enough.
It did come out 40 years ago, so I'll buy that Mo had hair 40 years ago.
I had hair 40 years ago. It was long after that, but yeah. So anyway, moving on.
I think we should linger here and talk about your hair. I think it's a great topic.
In Japan, the hand can be used like a knife, but this method doesn't work with a tomato. That's why we use the Ginsu. It's a knife that no kitchen should be without. The Ginsu can cut a slice of bread so thin you can almost see through it. It cuts meat better than an electric knife and goes through frozen food as though it were melted butter. The Ginsu is so sharp it can cut through a tin can and still slice a tomato like this. It can chop wood and still remain razor sharp.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mo, my favorite, my absolute favorite products they had were all the kitchen gadgets.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were a lot of them. There were so many. But we can't talk kitchen without talking about the single most iconic product ever, the Ginzu knife. Because who never wanted to cut a can and then slice a tomato paper thin?
Look at this. We're going to slice a hammer apart and then we're going to slice a tomato.
They did. They saw it on a hammerhead.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to chop wood.
So the very exotic sounding Ginzu steak knife with like the Japanese chef.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This was a product invented in a company based in Fremont, Ohio.
Of course.
I totally buy that.
The Far East.
The Far East of the
Compared
Mississippi.
To New York is Far East. I mean, that commercial was on all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could not turn a channel and then we're not selling some Ginzu knives someplace.
Right.
But I think it's funny. I don't know anybody who owned any. Did you guys?
I didn't either.
I do. I have three of them.
Really?
Did you? Really?
I have three of them because not from the As Seen on TV commercials, but later on in life when I had my own money, my own job, and I was at places like Costco and those things, they started doing demonstrations in stores with those things.
Okay.
And you could buy it in the store. And they did the same thing in the commercial because it wasn't just the Ginzu knife that you would get. Wait, there's more. Mm-hmm. If you buy now, you get a set of four steak knives. And you get a bread knife and you get a paring knife and this little juice squeezer bullshit thing. And that's exactly the way the guy did it in the store. And I was so mesmerized by it that I bought the whole damn set. The whole set
There's something to be said for a good sales pitch.
And they can't be sharpened ever.
So do they work?
No, I mean, they do at first, but they can't ever be sharpened really well because they're serrated knives.
They're serrated.
And serrated knives don't sharpen well.
Right.
You can't sharpen do it, each but it's little. Yeah. Oh my God, it's a pain in the ass. So I've had those. And just recently, I want to bring this up. You know how we're in COVID-19 and everybody has to work from home right now, right?
Yep.
That's a big thing. So my son was looking for work. He's 17. He's trying to get a job. And one of these companies that still sells these bullshit kind of knives tried to recruit him into a pyramid scheme version of the Ginzu knife selling system.
Really?
Was it Cutco?
Yes, it was Cutco.
I know somebody else who did that. Yeah.
Cutco is
bullcrap.
Oh, man. Do you remember the karate chopping the tomato?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Yep. You can't karate chop a tomato.
Right. He squishes it. They hired a Japanese exchange student to portray a chef and do his karate chopping. That's what they had on the
Really?
Air. Yep.
Oh, my God.
In this little town out of Ohio, they got a Japanese exchange student.
He's probably the only guy there.
Man.
Once you had your Ginzu steak knives, you weren't probably done in the kitchen because there are lots of other cool things to get. So do you remember the cooking pans that had armor coat on them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that nothing could stick to them, right? Like, absolutely nothing could stick to this thing.
Diamonds are the hardest thing on the first surface of the planet, but you can't cook an egg on it, and they crack an egg on this woman's diamond ring.
She's wearing it, too,
right?
I mean, she's actually wearing the ring.
Right, yeah, it's on her hand. Like, just put an egg on her hand. The point was, like, diamonds are nonstick and hardest surface, but you can't cook on them. So armor coat was the second toughest nonstick surface, and they were selling these pans in there.
Wow.
Well, first off, are diamonds really nonstick? I don't know.
Have you ever had an egg stick to your diamond?
I've never tried to cook a diamond or egg on a diamond.
Never tried it. Yeah, and they showed like absolutely nothing stuck to these.
Nothing stick, right. They would just put all this crap in there, and it would fall right out.
Until you get it home, and then everything sticks to it. As soon as you get that damn thing home.
Yeah, or you accidentally use like a metal utensil on it, and it's...
It would scrape off the surface. Yeah.
But do you remember the nut and bolt omelet they made?
Yes.
So in the commercial, they put a bunch of nuts and bolts and then they pour some scrambled egg in it and they stir it around and the whole omelet just falls out and the pan is unscratched.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first, who came up with the idea of a nut and bolt omelet? And second, I'm dubious that it would not be scratched, but it was in the commercial. So if you want to try it,
and
wait 4 to 6
weeks. Clean it, right? You just took a rag and wiped it. And
that's right.
It.
The paper towel. Ready to go.
Paper towel.
Man.
Apparently oil is not
ready
present.
To cook again.
I tell you, one of my favorite products of the kitchen family of As Seen on TV products was the Vegematic. I loved those commercials.
As a kid, I wanted one of those.
And that Vegematic was so awesome. You just
put it
over something, slap, 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 everything's chopped up. I love that damn thing. As a kid, that was awesome. Like, and we had one of those in our house. Mom had gotten one somewhere. I don't know if she bought it from TV or some store. She would let me chop up the little vegetables and onions and all that stuff. I would go to town smacking the hell out of that thing. That was so awesome.
it shot the things out too, right? As you chopped them, they shot out the pieces or something.
The one that we had,
that was the motorized one.
It was a circle plastic.
That was
a motorized
one. That was it. Okay.
Yeah. Just smack, circle plastic one. You just smack it, and then you take it off, and it's just a pile of vegetables. Now, depending upon which vegetable and how sharp your blades were at the time, it might be a mushy pile of vegetables because it squeezed all the juice out of them. But
now, is there a concern if you're smacking stuff with a Vegematic and you have a clapper nearby? Is it going to be like a strobe light effect? Or
lights going on and off like a disco ball. Strobe.
Tomatoes, it's dark. Potatoes, it's light.
And you know, Vegematic inspired a really great comedy skit. That's what inspired Gallagher's Sledge-O-Matic.
The Sledge-O-Matic. Oh, right, sure.
Yep. Yes.
Right.
I saw him live a couple of times, and I was in the front row, and I had my plastic for when he smashed the watermelon.
At the beginning of the Sledge-O-Matic routine, he did the whole little,
the whole thing.
As seen on TV spiel.
How much would you pay if it slices? It dices? It chops? Yeah.
What the hell could it possibly be? Sledge-O-Matic.
Yep. There were a couple of models. Do you remember these bottle cutters that would take your old garbage bottles and turn them into drinking glasses?
No.
Yeah, that would totally slice up your lips and cause
stitches. No,
right?
Really. So there were a couple of them. Ronco and KTL both did some. And you could take wine bottles and beer bottles and put them in this, what was basically a rotating glass cutter.
Right.
And it would cut off the bottle top, the neck of the bottle. It was sharp enough to cut glass, apparently, unless it wasn't, and it set up shards of glass everywhere. And one of them actually had a little torch to melt the glass after you cut it, so it was smooth. Every time I saw that, I'm like, so you're telling me what you have is you have a bottle, you have a razor sharp enough to cut glass, and a torch. Go nuts. What could possibly be wrong with this? I never knew
anyone. Hand this over to little Jimmy and see what happens. The fun ensues.
I love the commercials because it looked like something I wanted to do, like a craft you felt like doing.
Right.
But I never knew anybody that made their own glasses out of an old beer bottle or something.
Early on, they came out, and they had some sort of sandpaper pad that they gave you so you could get the rough edges off.
Oh, that's
it,
how
so
they kept the edge from cutting you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if it didn't have the torch, sand it.
But
it
seemed dubious. It really, I was questioning the safety of those glasses.
What's to stop you from cutting your finger off while you're trying to use the sandpaper on this sharp glass that you've just cut?
Nothing.
This was it. See many of those now, do you?
No.
Well, right. So this stuff could only be thought of and sold in our youth era of growing up. There's no way that this makes it into today's market, right? Because it would be a lawsuit before the commercial ever hit the airwaves. Somebody would sue that company instantly.
And one of the biggest draws to this is you were watching it all by yourself in your living room, and you're inside of your head going, that sounds like a great idea. And there's no echo chamber of the internet to go, oh, 2 stars, 1 star, wouldn't buy, terrible luck.
Right.
All you have is this guy going, it was your Ginsu knife salesman guys, you're going to love this. It's going to be amazing. Cost savings, blah, blah, blah. Crafts for the kids, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, shit, for $19, how can I not buy it?
Right.
So you end up buying it in your own little echo chamber. And yeah, you're right. Today, you wouldn't get through the first couple of lines. You're like, how much would you pay for blah, blah, blah? Like, oh, already bought it on Amazon. Next.
Right.
You wouldn't stick around. And finally, your kitchen is not complete. I know we're going to talk a little bit about the pocket fisherman to make it easy to go and catch some fish.
Yeah, we can't do this episode without talking about pocket fishermen.
Yeah. You've got your glasses you've made out of bottles, and you've got your buffalo-y haircut and everything. You're ready to sit down.
And you have slapped the hell out of some cucumbers. You've got some chopped vegetables.
You have that button thing now. So
yeah, my button's in good shape. It's stapled on.
Right.
Well, let's actually use it to heal that cut in your lip now. That you've got
you just stapled your lip shut with a button.
Staple your lip shut.
Yep. But the fish you caught with your pocket fisherman, you got to clean it.
Yeah.
The fishing magician came in.
I love that name. That is the best name. Fishing magician.
It wasn't a fishing pole like the pocket fisherman. It was actually a fish cleaning tool.
Right. Yep.
Yep.
Bunch of cleaning them,
scale it.
Because you get the knives, right? We talked about the Ginsu knife. Yeah. They always came with that fish fillet knife that, the knife handle, the blade would bend and let you slice in between whatever. But man, to have something as seen on TV specifically geared toward a specific task like cleaning fish, it was those types of salesmanship deliveries that made you think, how did I clean fish before the fishing magician? How was that possible? Now it's here. I have to buy it.
Yeah.
If I remember too, it had like it had a thing for descaling, like a cheese grater part, and it had a part for hooking in, like grabbing the like the spones and pulling them out, and it had a part for the fillet knife. Like all that was on there was just all in one, kind of clean your fish and get ready to throw them in the Vegematic and chop it up and make sushi, I guess.
It was like a Swiss Army knife-ish kind of deal, right?
Right. Swiss Army knife of fish production. That's exactly what it
is. Fish
and
destruction.
You know, it wasn't invented by him, but this really feels like it should have been a Ronco product. Does it not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's that kind of thing. We actually have a whole segment dedicated to Ron Popeil and his Ronco. That's coming up next.
It's the fishing invention of the century. There's never been anything like it. Popeil's Pocket Fisherman. Men, women, youngsters can cast almost like experts the very first time. Small enough to fit in glove compartment, backpack, any travel bag, or even in your pocket. And Pocket Fisherman's handle is its own mini tackle box. Flip up the special DuPont nylon rod and you're ready to fish anytime. Yes, it's fishing fun for the whole family and only $19.95. What a gift.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.
As we alluded to at the end of the last segment, there is no better as seen on TV representative than Mr. Popeil, Ron Popeil.
Ron Popeil.
The founder of Ronco. His father actually got him started in the business by creating a lot of these inventions that we've talked about himself, licensing them to companies like KTEL and later on his son's company. But Ron Popeil is without a doubt the king of late night infomercial as seen on TV products.
He appeared in the ads.
Yes, he was always in them.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
There's guys who did stuff, you know, the Schwarm guy, and they became, you know, the Bill guy who did the
Pitchman. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Nobody compares to Ron Popeil. That is the Mac Daddy of as seen on TV products.
So actually, my brother owned a Pocket Fisherman.
I do too. Yep. My father has.
We had a couple Pocket Fishermen. Right. I think they still
had a Pocket Fisherman. Yeah. We all did.
So it basically, right, it folds. So it's what is it? Yeah. Maybe 7 or 8 inches long, folded. You unfold that little white
the rod part.
Yeah, the rod from the antenna or whatever, and then it would extend a little bit too.
Yeah, a little like a telescoping action.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then the reel was embedded in the thing, and it was just all. And what is it, like a place to put your knife in the end or a bobber or something? There was a place for everything. Little compartments in it.
Right. So you put the hook so it all kind of stayed together and all that stuff. Yeah,
I love the commercial. It was the family in the family roadster station wagon. They pulled up to the side of the road because they saw a body of water, and the father pulled out
stop the fisherman,
and he's fishing with his kid. That was awesome.
Just right. I'm driving along. What do you want to? Oh, let's stop and fish. That's always just spontaneous. Unexpected stop and fishing. I don't know how many of those we have, but I've seen them in stores still today.
Mm-hmm. Because they're awesome products.
But who would think? I mean, that's like an evil genius to come up with that one. I mean, because, you know what I mean? Because there's no people who fish, you know, they're happy with what they have, you know, generally speaking. And who would think that, you know what? I want the convenience of always having my fishing rod with me wherever I go.
Yeah, it was like easy enough to put in your pocket. It's not that little, but yeah,
no, it's not that small.
Easily have in your backpack.
You'd have a big pocket, no question. It wasn't like for pockets that came on 1970s short shorts, kind of basketballs. No, it wouldn't fit in those pockets.
One of my favorite Ronco products, not because of the product, just because it was such a good ad, was Mr. Microphone.
Oh,
it worked with the radio,
it
right?
It had an FM transmitter. Yes, Mo.
Yes.
Right, and I just remember they're all driving in like a. the car with the top down, and they're talking, hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later.
I remember that.
They're just catcalling women, and she was like, all right, she's excited. These hippies are going to come back and abduct her later. Like, I don't feel safe. I need an adult.
He's got a microphone. That's good enough for me. I'm jumping in the car.
Yeah, see, the whole idea was you got this thing, put batteries in it, and it just transmitted, and you turned it on your radio, and that was your loudspeaker. It was a loudspeaker with no wire. It was just stupid and genius.
Yeah. Well, and you could hook it up to any kind of radio because, like you said, an FM transmitter. So a boombox that you might have, you know, you're on the street and you were doing some performance or busking or whatever you were doing to earn money, maybe. I mean, it was awesome. That was kind of the first time I ever saw people doing what later on started becoming karaoke. in that commercial. They had like the people in the living room.
They had people singing along to music. Yeah, exactly. It projected on like the low end of the FM spectrum, had a very short range. Like you had to be within a couple of feet of the radio for it to work. You couldn't go very far.
Because otherwise they had like FCC issues. So they had
that. Right.
Like,
it's too strong. You'd be in big trouble.
It was battery powered, so it couldn't be putting out that much power for transmission.
Yeah,
good point, so.
Yeah. Yep. And it's a microphone, so it wasn't. How many D cells can you fit in that? I don't know. It's Do you guys remember the Ronco smokeless ashtray? Did you guys have smokers in your family? Remember this?
I remember that.
Yes. We never had one. Both my parents smoked. We never had one. But I remember that smokeless ashtray thinking, good Lord, I wish my parents had that so I wasn't breathing in smoke all damn day.
Yeah, it just had like a fan that sucked it in, right? Basically, I mean, it worked
like
a cigarettes.
Fat hockey puck, right? And an ashtray on top.
Yeah. Well, it had like a glass dome kind of on it a little
later,
bit.
Later, they did have that too, but it was a fan that sucked it down. It pulled it down. It wasn't pulling it up. The dome was just to keep it until it got sucked in.
Yeah.
It was just filtering it out. It was pulling the smoke down, but it only prevented the smoke from the cigarette sitting in the ashtray.
Right. Not you breathing.
There was still smoke in the air. Yeah. Right?
Right. Yeah. Because it's not, unless you blew into the ashtray. Unless
please blow all your smoke at my ashtray, if you would, please.
Well, and that was back when an ashtray was an essential item in almost every
household,
home, right?
They were on every table, every coffee table. Ashtray.
Even if your family didn't smoke, you had them there for people who came over that might smoke.
Right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. My favorite kitchen one, though, had to be the egg scrambler. Have you guys remember this
one? With the needle?
The egg scrambler. Scramble the egg inside the shell.
Yeah, it's like a little needle that you put the egg on, you hit a button, and it spun it inside the egg to scramble the egg inside the shell, because we know how hard it is to scramble the egg normally.
Right. Well, that's the problem. And the commercial was someone, you know, with eggs in it, they're in a whisk, and they're exhausted. Oh, my God. Oh. Whisking eggs again for several seconds? This is bullshit.
The kids will never eat at this rate.
My family will go hungry.
So instead, you have this machine that, again, it's like one of those things. It's like, why?
I always imagined that it was designed as a way to store your scrambled egg in its original shell. You could just scramble the egg inside the shell, put a piece of tape over it, put it back in the refrigerator. Then later on, when you wanted to cook scrambled eggs, it was already ready.
Okay, we already had a hard enough time like with hard-boiled eggs and regular eggs and using the wrong ones at the wrong time. So now you got the scramble thing on top of that.
Yeah.
As a kid, I thought it was cool. It was just a neat, like, wow, you could scramble eggs in the shell.
Oh, yeah. It was cool, right. So cool. But it wasn't really a problem.
It was not really a problem.
We never had one, but it didn't have a very good track record. It was hard to clean because it was like it punctures this egg. It also, when you punctured it, you're knocking a little bit of shell in there. So I guess enjoy that.
Right.
And they tend to break down a few times because it was a high-speed motor to turn and whisk that egg with that little thing. It didn't last very long, but I have a feeling once I had it and used it a few times, I probably wasn't going to use it many more times after that. So who cares?
I was thinking after the first time, you'd be like, it's over.
But the commercial made you feel like you had to have it and it was going to be perfect for the rest of your life. That's what was so great about Ron Popeil and Ronco commercials. I don't care what the product and how silly it was, whether it was the pocket fisherman or a smokeless ashtray or this egg scrambler. Every one of these commercials made you feel like, A, it was the best product ever invented. Yep. B, it solved a problem you didn't even realize you had. And C, it was going to last forever.
And they always set them up with, here's the problem. Here's the solution. Here's the examples. Here's how much you love it. And now if we told you it only costs this much money. So it's so hyped up. But by the time they say it's $25, you're like, is that all? How could I not purchase it?
But there's more.
But there's more.
So sometimes they go, if you order now, we'll send you a second one for no extra charge. I'm like, yes. Are they just that
shipping
chintzy?
And handling only, which was more than the product cost.
Oh. Yeah.
Or sometimes they would take like the Ginsu knives. They always had that stupid little juicer that came with them if you bought the set.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So sometimes with the egg scrambler, if they were trying to push egg scramblers, and we'll include the juicer, blah, 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 from the Ginsu. So they would cross promote these different things that they owned and put them with each other just to.
They're not idiots.
Yeah. Put like fake value into the deal. It was brilliant. Yeah.
You remember the record vacuum, which was like the little thing you put your record
that
in
I
and it cleans the dust off
I don't remember
them?
That. No?
Okay. So here's what this was. So your vinyl records, your LPs, they would get dusty. Okay, you need to wipe them off. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not supposed to wipe them from center to edge. You're supposed to wipe them in a circle.
Circular motion, right. Run the grooves.
Just to clean them, right? With like a felt pad.
Okay.
Well, this thing, oddly, it had no vacuum in it, even though it was called a Ronco record vacuum.
I was going to ask, did it suck everything off the
No. So all it was is a little thing on your table. It was kind of like a cheese-shaped little bit, and it had a slot with felt all around it, and you set your record in it, and there was a little rubber wheel on the bottom, and it would turn the record, and it basically basically, instead of wiping the record, it was pulling the record through these little soft brushes to clean the dust off.
Right.
And it was basically, it was spinning it around, kind of gently wiping it with these little felt strips. And hopefully it had removed all the dust, but it didn't remove fingerprints or anything else like that. In fact, I remember the commercial bothered me because the guy held it, like he set it in. He didn't hold it by the edges. He held it with his fingers on the grooves and set it in. And I always saw, watched that and went, It's like seeing the wrong version of it's and it's, or there and there. It just bothers me that much. And I saw him holding it with his oily damn fingers.
You know, Ronco, he's the king of as seen on TV products. He even went all the way up into the 2000s. You remember the Showtime rotisserie?
Oh, the
barbecue,
chicken thing.
And he was in there with the people cooking and everything.
Oh, wow.
That stuff was much later on, so it's not really part of our backtrack era. But Ron Popeil, the man's, you know, he's a national treasure. I don't care what anybody says. Without Ron Popeil, you don't have as seen on TV. I don't think you have Amazon without Ron Popeil. I'm going to make that statement.
Wow, that's bold.
You don't have Amazon without Ron Popeil.
Yeah. You definitely don't have eggs you can scramble in the shell.
We don't have that. That part I would agree with, for sure. I think, why don't we round out this episode? I'm just going to play a little bit of a sample of the Weird Al Yankovic song dedicated to Ron Popeil. He's that much of a legend. He's got a Weird Al song.
I need a Vegematic. I need a pocket fisherman.
Do you scramble eggs like this? You never get a perfectly blended egg, and then there's the cleanup. But now there's the egg scrambler. It scrambles an egg while it's still in the shell. The egg scrambler perfectly blends the egg white and yolk in only 5 seconds. Scrambled eggs, French toast, and omelets not only look better, but taste better. Get the egg scrambler by Ronco, a great Christmas gift for only $7.77.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. The irony today is that the As Seen on TV brand is probably products that have never been on TV, unless they were from the original in the 70s or 80s. Because these ads, as you said, George, they just don't work today. But it's that style of product that you see in these pop-up stores and malls and your strip malls and things like that you were talking about.
I mean, they put a commercial out there, but it's not what the commercials were. It's just introducing your product, and then you go buy it at Walmart. That's what it is.
Go here to Amazon. Go to Walgreens. Go to CVS and find this thing, And that red logo, that TV Guide-looking logo, it's now completely, I think as I mentioned, public domain. Anybody can use it on any packaging or the logo of your business or whatever. Mm-hmm. No trademark infringement. It's wide open. So while we may not be forced to endure these 2 or 3 minute long commercials for products we didn't know we had to have, but As Seen on TV definitely continues an enduring legacy well beyond Gen Xers like ourselves. They just might not know where it came from, but now they will, thanks to us.
Wow, you served a purpose.
Good job, George. Well done. Before we wind up this show, we always like to take a moment here at the end to give our gratitude to all the folks that support us over on Patreon. A few bucks every single month to support us financially, what we do here on the podcast, over on the website, and on YouTube. Man, this list is getting long. It's nearly 30 people now, so huge breath. I want to thank each and every one of you. Adam, Travis, Mark, Levi, Tom J, Chet, Slowmo, Jonathan H, David, Chewbacca, Stian, Greg L, Blasted or Stash at Thomas, Tony, Ben, Arlem, Stew Monkey, T2, Dan, Chad, Jason, Matt, David, Marcus, Dan, Mike C, Greg Z, Agile, and new since we last spoke, Lee has joined us.
Hey,
as
Lee,
a patron.
Welcome,
Thank you so much, Lee. Whew. I suppose there's a point at which I'll have to stop reading all these, but I don't think it's coming anytime soon. I'm going to keep trying.
We'll just create our own Ron Popeil commercial for Patreons.
We'll have a special episode of me reading all the names. That's what we'll do.
But wait, there's more.
There are more patrons. Here they come. Thank you, each and every one of you, for becoming one of our patrons, supporting us.
Absolutely.
If you have not yet joined and you're interested in supporting what we do, Mo, would you be so kind as to tell the fourth listeners how they can go about getting on board?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really easy. All you got to do is go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. There's a couple links there. Click on the right links. You can determine what level you want to give. For a few bucks, you know, you become a supporting member. A few bucks more, we have special content that only Patreon members get. And then even higher levels, we even have swag. And I also want to point out that I think we had a couple new members, and I think it was because George did this last, I think the last couple episodes he did it. So now, you know, if people were listening now and were to join so that I can maybe say that,
you would get the credit, give his pitch.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Are you trying to steal thunder out of something I wasn't even competing against now? Because now your ass
is
done.
You are competing.
You know I'm going to get all the Patreons now.
If we could get like 3 or 4 new members for our next episode, then I could be like, hey, it was because of
it's
what I
said. It's the battle of the pitch members.
As long as they all put George's in the subject as a reason why they're supporting us, I'm not good with that.
Oh, my goodness.
But no, we really appreciate every single person because it helps us do what we do.
I don't need any credit. Just you becoming a patron is validation enough. Thank you. George or Mo, they can take all the glory. I'm fine with it. Thank you, Mo. And thank you for listening to this episode of The Backtrack. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, and next week with a regular edition of our show. Until then, I'm John. George, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you, man.
Oh, it's fun.
And fourth listener, we appreciate you most of all, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
GenX Grown-Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
I need a clever way to get into this. I don't know. So
you already used up all your clever at the beginning.
All my clever is gone.
How about something like one thing you couldn't buy collectible drinking glasses from was As Seen on TV or something along there.
Yeah, do what George said.
Yeah. Thank everybody. Thank everybody.
You don't hear that very often.
What has just popped up? Aww, I just got a notification that Mo sent me a gift.
Yep.
Thanks, Mo.
I decided that if you're going to do it yourself, I torture you myself for your birthday.
You fucking sent me that salvage game.
Happy belated birthday.
Gift is a relative term.
I sent you a curse. Enjoy it.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.